ja, wir können da gerne mal gucken.
This is a public session, of course, understandably so. Interesting times we find ourselves indeed. Others are getting married, and others are getting divorced in the form of ID and PA. And also in the form of COPE. They are engagements, doing rounds, and they are divorce papers being served in courts, and so forth and so on. I guess, Baba Kwekulu, that's in the nature of politics, especially from, you know, desperation point of view. And that's what normally happens. And others would simplify and say that's life in politics, mama, with divorces and engagements. Okay. Mr. Dutoy, welcome. Our remarks simply were just about divorces and engagements or marriages. That's all to suggest that all is welcome. Judgment today, Mr. Dutoy, marriage here refers to ID and DA, and divorce refers to COPE. And all what is taking place in court. Plant breeders' rights policy. The department has been having this item for a while. That's about the only item that we have. what is becoming very clear, members, is that as the time goes, especially coming week, the momentum is going to pick up quite heavily. Also, with the amount of work that is expected to come before us, which is going to drive us, you know, to do a lot of research in Okzola, and also a lot of reading, so to speak. In our program next week, we're having fisheries, mm-hmm. and also a briefing from the minister. And week after, we're having a program on public hearing with the Agri BEE Charter, which will then involve a number of other stakeholders who must come and talk to us about transformation in the agricultural sector of our economy. But those are matters that are still to come. Just for interest sake, for others. Mama? No. Now, in a nutshell, members and also department, We have that one item for the agenda, and then we'll hand over to Dr. Mukhajane and your team, just to introduce very briefly, and then you shoot.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think with me today, I brought along Dr. Fisser. Marinda Fisser, she's a plant pathologist specialist. She's the chief director for agricultural production. And then on my left is Dr. Jafta, who's the director for genetic resources. She's a geneticist. And on the far left, we've got Loli Tando, let no Mkwana. She's our registrar for the Plant Breeders' Rights Act. So the focus for today is mainly on the Plant Breeders' Act. And our presentation, I'll just do the overview, small, short, and then I hand over to Dr. Jafta, who will do the main presentation. And I think collectively, when we come to answer the questions, we'll answer them. I take that we also notice that we also are here with Faisal Daniels from the ministry. In your possession, you should be having three documents, which is the first one is an overview on plant breeders' rights in the country. You should be having a document of the policy, which we under discussion now, and the presentation, which will be done by Dr. Shafter. I just first maybe just to broadly say to you that the plant breeders' rights has got nothing to do with genetically modified organisms. It's separate. The plant breeders' rights is managed under genetic resources, and it's much more related internationally to WIPO, which is an organization which is dealing with called the World Intellectual Property Rights Organization, and is based in Geneva. And then the GMO, the genetically modified organism, is related mainly to the protocol on conservation, the biodiversity, and that one is different, it's under there. And you find that some of the part of the GMO, I think that's where we work closely with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Health when you deal with the GMOs. Now, our focus for today will just be dealing on the plant breeders' rights. Now, I think one of the main objectives of the plant breeding in agriculture, horticulture and forestry is to increase productivity and quality of plants by developing varieties with an improved yield and better resistance to plant pests or diseases. You find that most of the people enter into the breeding process basically to come up with varieties which are resistant to adverse effects like weather, or pests maybe are even resistant to diseases. So this act basically, or the policy is focusing on that. And I think the reason why we are coming, because initially it was amended and we didn't have a policy. But now we are trying to correct that to come up with a policy and ensure that later on we'll then amend the act. The Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries manages the breeders' rights, which is planned of 1976. And internationally, you got an organization which is called UPOF, which is called Convention for the Protection of New Varieties of Plants. It is not just broadly just to give you. Now, that international organization, that's where you find that most of the countries become members of that. We, South Africa, became members of UPOF since 1977. You, Dr. Jafter will talk on that later on. You'll see in the presentation, later on in the presentation, that in SADC, it happens that we are the only country in SADC where we are members of UPOF. And I think we'll talk on that on the presentation. Now, the implementation of the plant breeders' rights in South Africa has been a major stimulus for the plant breeding industry. Not only does it provide for financial remuneration, but it also gives local plant breeders and producers access to high-quality new varieties from foreign countries. Now, I said to you that this one is not related to the genetically modified organisms, but it's related. It could be related to the Patent Act. Remember that the Patent Act is actually... It's on the overview, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's my introductory remark.
Okay.
Yes. No. Okay. Now, when we go to the table in page 2 there, it's sort of like giving an indication of who actually owned these rights in South Africa. And we happen to be having the total of about 2,254 varieties in the country, rice in the country, and it happens that 70% of that, which is 1,521, is owned by the foreign people. The domestically 733, the table also has got the breakdown of different who actually domestically own those rights. We've got the ARC holding 328, and then university 17, and we've got the private 388. Now the Plant Breeders' Rights Act.
Where is the sample? Where's your document?
Okay.
Where is the document you are looking for?
This one. But I think the table is not actually included in your thing. But it's this overview, this document.
Yeah.
This one.
Which gives the overview, yes. Mm-hmm. It's got flowers on the outside. Okay. I've got an extra one, I can give this one to the chair. Oh, okay. No. We adjusted because when we are preparing, we then updated this one. Perhaps maybe the chair can give him this one. I think in terms of the sources and in terms of the test and the trials, there's also, I think we're saying that we're having a dual system, but Dr. Jafta will go on the detail on that. But basically, I was just giving the overview of the differences between plant breeder strikes, GMOs, because this one is not actually related to the GMOs at all. Later on, I think we'll show you the examples of the pictures of some of the varieties which are there in the country. So can I give over then to Dr.
Maybe if you could start off with, I thought you also in your introduction begin to state as to why you are here. What objectives do you want to achieve as a department? What is expected of us as members of Parliament? I thought you would start off with that introduction so that it also clarifies yourself. I know these are issues that are explained beforehand, but just for clarity's sake.
So maybe just to indicate to you, I thought I explained just half part of it. The reason we're here is to present the policy to the honourable members and seek guidance in terms of some of the changes which need to be instituted in the Plant Breeders' Rights Act, because the intention of the policy, after approval, they will then have to go and amend the Act itself. Now, we've been having this Act where actually did not protect, you know, some of the varieties. I think you'll see in the detail when we do the presentation. But basically, the Plant Breeders' Rights Act, when we're talking about the dual testing system, I think you have that we've got an official testing of evaluation in the center and breed tribe. But I think I'll leave everything because I want to indicate that I've just been gone over into production, and I'm not an expert in plant breeders. But I think as a manager, I think my understanding is that the reason why we're actually here is to ensure that we ensure that the policy itself conforms to the current challenges which are facing us in the country, particularly when it's related to breeders' rights, and also recognizing some of the tradition, or maybe I can say indigenous knowledge, and also ensuring that, you know, particularly when it comes to research, it also addresses those areas of research, because one of the things in South Africa which we have seen, and I think could be the reason for this foreign breeders' rights, the numbers which are very high, because of the fact that internationally, most of the people invest a lot in research on breeding material. But you find that in South Africa, we are actually not, our research institutions are not focusing on the breeding material, but we are having discussions already with the ARC to start looking into that, because this talks more on the rights. So the rights can be awarded to an institution than an individual or even a private person. I think Dr. Jasta will go into the detail on that. So can, is that okay, Chair, when can give over to Dr. Jasta? Thank you, Dr. Jasta.
Thank you, Dr. Mahojani, for the introduction, and thank you for this opportunity to present the Plant Breeders' Rights Policy to this committee. And thank you, Honorable Chair, for giving us guidance this afternoon. I have to admit, I'm so glad that this afternoon I'm not talking to you about GMOs, but on a slightly different matter. However, it is also not an easy matter, but perhaps to an extent less controversial. In this presentation, I will interchangeably refer to plant variety protection or plant breeders' rights. It's actually the same. It's exactly the same thing. So please allow me that freedom to use those terms interchangeably. As indicated, the plant breeders' rights in South Africa is managed under the plant breeders' rights is managed under the Plant Breeders' Rights Act of 1976. However, it was amended in 1996. In South Africa, we have a dual testing system, which means that we follow two approaches in terms of testing new varieties. We have official testing centres out in Pretoria at Roodepoort Centre, as well as one down in Cape Town at Stellenbosch. We also have an office out in Mpumalanga, Nelspruit. So those are the official testing centres which are under our control. Or, in terms of testing new varieties, the breeders are also allowed to establish trials on their farms, but those are done under the strict guidance and prescripts of the Plant Breeders' Rights Act. Breeders' trials are normally used especially for fruit trees, because you would realise that it's quite a lot of investment that goes into establishing all of these trials, and therefore we have this dual testing system, official as well as breeders' trials. Our plant variety protection system is based on the UPOF system, which we will cover later on in this presentation in more detail. South Africa is bound to the 1978 UPOF convention. There is a revised one, 1991, but South Africa at this point is not bound to the 1991 form of this convention. Let's quickly look at what we refer to when we speak about a plant breeder's right. A plant breeder's right is a form of an intellectual property right granted to breeders for newly bred plant varieties. So it is in essence something like a patent, if we want to use a generic term. A plant breeder's right therefore gives the holder of that right a means of getting financial remuneration for his or her effort in developing this new variety. And because of this incentive, this financial incentive, there's obviously that level of encouragement for breeders to develop new varieties constantly. And this is important for sustainable agriculture. Now, the duration of the right varies according to whether it's vines and trees. The right is valid for 25 years, or it can, in other cases, it can be 20 years. But at any given point, a right holder can surrender a right, or a right can be cancelled by the registrar, and there are conditions under which that will happen. Who can apply for a plant breeder's right? There's no discrimination. It's three categories of persons. Can be the person who bred the variety, the employer, of the person who breeds the variety. If you're employed at ARC, then ARC would apply for a plant breeder's right, or a successor in title of the two above. And foreign applications can only be made through an agent residing in South Africa. So if you're a foreigner stationed, for instance, in Europe, and you want to release a variety developed in Europe into South Africa's territory, you would need to have an agent that is resident in South Africa to do the application on your behalf. And obviously, we would make sure that you have the necessary authorization legally to act on behalf of the breeder. It is also important to note that there is no discrimination as to who can apply. But you've heard from the introduction that we also have locally institutions and individuals that are in fact right holders. What exactly is it that this right covers? Okay, so what is it that you are protected when you have a right to a plant variety? What is it that other people cannot do? Other people cannot produce or reproduce or multiply the variety in question. They cannot sell it. They cannot market it, export or import that variety, or stock it in any way. So, and if you want to do that, you need to have the authorization from the right holder. There are obviously exceptions, and this is very important when we do compare it to a patent, because under patents, the exceptions are not as wide as we have under plant breeders' rights. So the breeders' rights does not extend to acts done privately or for non-commercial purposes. This means that my mother, when she buys a protected variety, she can plant it in the next year without having any royalties due to the right holder. Or for the breeder's right does not extend to experimental purposes. So institutions such as ARC can use a protected variety to develop new varieties from that without being liable for royalties. And important is that a farmer, a smallholder farmer, can use a variety on his own holding for own purposes, but it does not include sale. As soon as there's sale involved, then there would be infringement of the plant breeder's rights, and therefore royalties would be due. I thought that it is important, myself, I'm not a botanist by training, to understand exactly where is it that we are focusing our attention to, in terms of what is the subject matter that is at hand that we're dealing with in terms of protection. You know that if you look at classification, botanical classification, you start off with a family, and the example here is Poaceae. It's a grass family. Within that family, you would have different genera or different genus, and you would perhaps have something like Zea, which is the maize family, or something like sorghum. Within a specific genus, you would have specific species. The example I'm giving here is Zea maize, which is our grain maize that we know. Lower than that, within that species, you have further development and further separation, and this is where you have your bred varieties. And this variety can be a variety for long growth or short growth or long growth. It depends on what that variety would be. The next question I want to touch on is, under which circumstances can a variety be protected? There are obviously certain rules that needs to be complied with, or certain criteria that needs to be attained before we can say a variety it can be protected. And that is, it must be new. And it can only be considered new if it has not been sold in South Africa for more than 1 year, or in any other country for 6 years in the case of trees and vines, or other plants for more than 4 years before filing an application within South Africa. A variety must also be distinct, meaning you must be able to distinguish it from other known varieties. and it must be uniform, meaning that if you plant this variety out in a field, they will all look the same. If it's a flower, they will all have pink flowers, not the one will be white and the other one would be red. They will all be pink flowers. So it must be uniform. It must also be stable, meaning that from when I plant it the next year, it will look exactly the same. So from generation to generation, it must look the same. You would at this point already realize that this is important when we speak about sustainable agriculture. I did indicate that we will come back to what is UPO. Indicated that South Africa is bound to the 1978 convention. Now UPO aims the organization aims to set uniform standards. So if you look at this map, you would see that the US, a lot of countries in the South America, in Europe, Australia, they are all members of the UPOF convention. In Africa, it is only South Africa together with Kenya, Morocco and Tunisia that are members of UPOF. UPOF sets common standards, which means when we evaluate a variety of plum in South Africa, it would be evaluated exactly the same in the US, in Europe, Australia, etc. So it sets those common standards. The value for us is that nobody can come up with new rules and criteria and say, you guys are a developing country, we want there must be this done additionally. The rules count for everybody. Now, in terms of when, because of using this uniform standard, there are clear guideline documents for all different categories of crops. And these guidelines are developed over a number of years. The UPOF bodies that we engage on a regular basis. I'm going to start right at the bottom part of this diagram. You would see that there are different technical working parties. We call them technical working parties, it's actually just technical working groups. Those ones for agricultural crops, for food crops, for ornamental plants and forest trees, for vegetables, etc. So at this level, all of the technical guideline documents are developed. It goes through a process of consolidation by the technical committee, and it then ends up for endorsement at the council, UPOF council. And if it's endorsed by council, it means when an assessment is being done for plum varieties, that is the test guideline that would be followed. Now, what is the value of UPOF membership? I've already explained about the common rule. UPOF recently undertook an impact study. They focus on the following countries: Argentina, Kenya, China, Poland, and Korea. And what they found is that when they in those countries when the UPOF system was introduced, that the number of varieties that was available increased within that country. So people had access to more improved varieties, and these included foreign varieties. And because there's this incentive, because remember now it means that if a variety is developed in South Africa, the same rules will apply in other UPOF member countries. So domestically, they've also seen an increase in the number of breeding activities, both at the private and at the in the public sector. South Africa, we have a long and extended and history in our involvement in UPOF. Currently, South Africa will be chairing the technical working party on fruit. So this working party here, technical working party on fruit, South Africa has just taken the chairmanship. South Africa has also been a lead expert on a number of different crops. Recently, we are the lead expert on the developing of technical guidelines on agapanthus, olives, as well as almond. So from that you can see that there's some good work being undertaken. Just briefly, what would a test guideline look like? And I want you to focus on item number 6. You would have a table of characteristics, and this table of characteristics can perhaps refer to fruit shape. Okay, this is an example of fruit shape, you would see that in terms of the fruit mucron, is this little end bit here on the fruit. A technical guideline would say you would have to look at whether there's a mucron present or absent, and you use that as a characteristic to distinct, to use to guide you on whether this variety is distinct. Or you can also use inflorescence length, the length of the group of the cluster of flowers arranged on the stem, and the criteria would be short, medium, long, etc. Now, if South Africa does not participate, remember this is living organ, this is living material. Our conditions in the southern hemisphere is quite different from that in the northern hemisphere. If we do not actively participate in these standard-setting bodies, they might come up with a range of characteristics which does not include our experiences here. And remember what we're saying, that if it's not, these are common standards. So if it's not there, then we can't use it. So that it will then put us at a disadvantage in how we evaluate varieties here. So this is why it's very important that we engage and we also ensure that the South African or the Southern Hemisphere context is always included. As a further example of the value of plant varieties, if you look at this plum, this one where the mucron is absent would have a better market value because it will package much better. It will be less prone to spoilage or injury to the fruit, because if fruit is transported, obviously at this point, this pointed area, that is where it will be most prone for damage. And that is just a small example of the value of further development of plant varieties. I will now be going into exactly what do we consider the problems which this policy aims to address. Firstly, farmers' rights. I have to admit, farmers' rights is a very, very broad term. But we will have to focus our attention as to how do we realize farmers' rights within the context of plant variety protection or PBR. Now, we've recognized worldwide recognition that farmers over millennia of years have played a key role in the conservation and improvement of plant genetic resources, which are just the plants. Okay, so that's just another term that we use, plant genetic resources. However, besides this recognition, the real contribution is not recognized when we look at formal systems of regulatory oversight. Okay, there are relevant instruments such as the Convention on Biological Diversity, the International Treaty on Plant Genetic Resources, that speaks to farmers' rights. However, because it's such a difficult subject, they always say, no, you guys must resolve it at national level. Okay, now if you look at farmers' varieties are those varieties, these unimproved varieties, which we normally still find in rural areas, where we refer to them as landrace material. This material does not conform to the requirement for distinctness, uniformity, as well as stability, because it is what we call a very heterogeneous group of material, which means you would find a maize stalk that has different colors when we look at the kernels, and that is the kind of variety that we have in landrace material. And you would know, looking at the criteria for distinctness, uniformity, and stability, it would not conform to those. And there is also poor protection of the traditional knowledge that is associated with those landrace material, which is commonly being used in the development of these new varieties. So somebody knows that this variety has insect resistance. They access the material and use it to develop new varieties that would conform to distinctness, uniformity, and stability. And they then get a right to it, and they have financial gain. But coming back, there's no benefit that flows back to the farmer. So the issue of farmers' rights is a challenge. Now, Plant variety protection also contributes to erosion of genetic diversity, again as a result of this uniformity, because we are saying it must be uniform. We don't want this diversity too. So on the other hand, it erodes genetic diversity. Remember, this is about financial gain. So people would actually go out and access material for research and development as well as for further breeding. Now that getting access to the material can either be through in situ or ex situ collections or communities. We have a national plant genetic resources center where we collect material and the material is stored there. This is what we would call an ex situ. It's out of its normal environment, or it can be in situ. Somebody can walk into the field and actually just access, take the material from there. Okay. Now, there are laws for access, accessing material of that nature to get prior informed consent and for benefit sharing under the Biodiversity Act, but that is poorly implemented because the oversight is extremely challenging. And coming back to UPOF does indicate that we can't set any additional condition for the granting of a PBR or for the compulsory sharing of benefits. So no other criteria besides distinctness, uniformity, and stability and newness can be used. Dr. Mukhajani has indicated that in South Africa there's a skewed ownership of the holders of PBR. This is, however, not unique to South Africa, and it's the case as in many other developing countries. Okay, and what we've also seen, we've seen a trend to move that we've seen an increase in the number of PBRs for ornamentals, which may indicate there's a decline in investment in the other crops, such as agricultural crops and vegetables. And there's also a limited focus on orphan crops. Nobody at this point seems to be interested in those orphan crops such as cowpea, your and cassava. Now, the PBR that we are looking at is a form of an exclusive right. It actually excludes other third parties to engage in an activity with that protected variety without... You can't engage in any of those activities if you don't have the permission of the right holder. Okay. Now, this contradicts our social and economic system for seed and knowledge exchange, because we're used to exchanging seed, exchanging our knowledge, not protecting it and keeping it for ourselves. So there is some challenge towards this exclusive right that a PBR brings with it. There's also a lack of knowledge in about a plant breeders' rights, and that leads obviously to infringement, unauthorized use of the variety. And I'm not going to go into what infringement actually entails. Currently, the system that we use is that there's a limit to the genera. Remember, we've spoken about what the genus is. There's a limit to the genera that can be protected, and this actually contradicts Article 27.3b of the trade related of the TRIPS agreement. And TRIPS stands for the agreement on trade related aspects on intellectual property rights agreement. That is what it stands for, because Article 27.3b of TRIPS says that we have to provide a protection system for plants. It doesn't say a limit. So we are a member of TRIPS, so we at this point not providing protection for all genera and species. Actually, there's this conflict to our obligation in terms of TRIPS. We're also seeing an increasing number of applications for plants which are covered by other pieces of legislation, such as narcotic plants and invasive plants. Now, there's also applications that we receive on wild of plants that was accessed from the wild. But remember, discovery, we don't in terms of discovery, discovery is not a creation of mind. If you discover something, you walk along the path and you see this is a new plant, that is not a creation of your mind. You can't then claim a right to it. If you discovered it and you've done something to develop it further, then there was some intellectual application from your side to develop it further and you produce something new, then you are eligible for a plant breeder's rights. Then there's also some challenges in terms of filing of application where the required documentation is not submitted on time, as well as delays in supplying the plant material. This is especially a challenge, keeping in mind that when a variety or a breeder from an overseas country wants to have a right here, he has to submit the material to South Africa. But again, there's phytosanitary constraints that we have to be mindful of. So plant material first has to go into quarantine, and whilst in quarantine, you may have that the material dies off, etc. So there's also this issue of those kind of delays, and then there's this practice of people asking for extension upon extension upon extension, and this policy also tries to deal with those administrative hurdles. In terms of, remember, we are a country where genetically modified organisms can be grown, and we have to ensure that there's good harmony between the PBR office as well as the system under the GMO Act, so that there's no release or evaluation of a GM variety that is still under being assessed by the under the GMO Act. If you go into the shop, you would see a variety. The most common one that I'm aware of is Pink Lady. So it's an apple variety. So those are the variety denomination, which just means the variety names. And it's important for the identification of the variety. Now, sometimes the breeders are not sure as to what they would want to call it. They perhaps would want to test the market, whether the name would fly or not and would be beneficial for their marketing, and therefore they don't always supply the necessary denomination, or they want to change it after a while. That becomes an administrative nightmare, because as soon as there's something that changes around a specific variety, we have to publish it and make sure that everybody knows in the industry about this change. Hopefully by now you've realized that there's a lot of technical requirements related to the granting of a PBR. And here it is important to note that, remember, we are in public sector. There's high mobility within the public sector, and these trials, they cover more than one growing season. So you might have an evaluator looking at it this year. By next season, this person is gone and somebody else has to take it over. And the kind of observations are sometimes very, very, very detailed observations. Although it's documented, it's not something that somebody can take over easily. So that is also a challenge for us. Around genetically modified varieties, we're only looking at the morphological level, looking at it outwardly. When it comes to GM varieties, those varieties are different at the genotypic level, at the genetic level. It's not visible at the morphological level. And the issues that the regulatory system has to deal with, it's technical and it's legal. So and there's an overlap of some other socio-economic issues in between. So at the moment, there's no support for the registrar to deal with it. So there's no advisory committee. Then the material is also very important to constantly refer back to. If I'm looking at something new, what is it that is already available? The Act at this point only says that you must maintain the material whilst the right is valid. After that, the farmer or the right holder can chop down the tree, and we then don't have the material to compare it against for our future evaluations. Then the Act provides for the registrar, when a right holder unduly refuses the issuance of a license to somebody to also have access to the variety, for the registrars to issue a compulsory license, but there's at this point no clear guidance as to the registrar as to how to approach it. So we will be the policy also then looks at this constraint. There are, in terms of when we look at IP, where plants or patents in general, intellectual property rights, there are two broad philosophies, and I will attempt to indicate in this slide where does plant variety protection or plant breeders' right fit into. I have about, I should be done, Chair, within the next 20 minutes with the presentation.
Okay.
Is it okay if I have 15 minutes?
Okay.
Okay. And perhaps I should then go on to the actual policy. Okay. Chair, in terms of the policy, what we are proposing, we're proposing that there should be a national authority, and this national authority should comprise of the registrar, as well as the necessary support personnel to undertake the necessary assessments. And considering that there's always the issue around other legislations that we have to comply with, as well as the extent of the area that we have to cover in this around plant breeders' rights, that there would be collaboration with independent is very important, national and international experts, as well as and also with other departments to ensure compliance. That material that is submitted to the national authority, that would be done in terms of a material transfer agreement. This is important to ensure that that the material is not subject to abuse, because remember the material that we have received is the object of protection, so that we ourselves as an authority is not infringing the right. That the tests that are conducted either by the national authority or the breeders, and that will be done according to strict guidelines, and that we establish an advisory body for the registrar. In terms of how we will be dealing with farmers' rights, the exploitation of biopiracy, genetic erosion, and exclusive rights, we're saying that the UPOF as well as the PBR already, the existing PBR Act already provides for farmers, smallholder farmers, to use protected varieties on their own holding. They just cannot sell it. Okay. We have a national program on the conservation and sustainable use of plant genetic resources, and this allows us to systematically collect and document and store land race material so that is not lost. There are other policy instruments such as the Indigenous Knowledge Systems policy, which aims to strengthen Indigenous knowledge systems. Remember, I did say that Indigenous knowledge is poorly recognized, and the International Treaty on plant genetic resources for food and agriculture already stipulates that there needs to be access and benefit sharing mechanisms for farmers. The Convention on Biological Diversity, from which the Biodiversity Act derives, gives South Africa the power to exercise, to manage and to conserve its biodiversity, and we have national sovereignty over our biological resources. And it also sets the terms under which material may be accessed, and there must be prior informed consent, and where there's any benefit, that benefit be shared equitably and fairly as an example, with farmers from whom the material was accessed. In terms of the Patents Act, our Patents Act says you can't patent any living organism. But TRIPS says we can provide for protection through a sui generis system, which just means of its own kind. And this is what the PBR Act is at this point. It's a system, a sui generis system, that we can provide, a protection system for plant varieties. The Patent Amendment Act also provides for disclosure of origin when there's use of indigenous genetic resources and indigenous knowledge systems. This means that we're covering then the issue of exploitation and biopiracy through the Patents Amendment Act. The relevant administrative procedures, periods for exclusive rights, followed by compulsory licensing, the scope of the right, as well as getting the necessary guidelines and regulations on the conditions of the compulsory licensing, that is, some of it is already in place, and some would be covered under the Amendment Act that we are dealing with at the moment. In terms of the skewed ownership and technical requirements and infringement, the policy proposes that breeding activity should be promoted at public institutions, because that then allows, because public institutions, it's our own people, we can then determine the terms of protection, the restrictions, as well as the exemptions, and it also serves then as a further income for these public research institutions. Then, in terms of our human resource development and capacity building, we will undertake measures to strengthen our technical capacity to undertake the DUS testing. We propose that collaboration and engagement with technical standard setting bodies, and also providing a legal support program for new entrant plant breeders. Then, in terms of infringement, remember ultimately a plant breeder's right, like I've explained, is a private right. However, and enforcement is then a private matter. However, the national authority will cooperate with local and international stakeholders on matters concerning enforcement. Yes, thank you, Chair, and that's the end of the presentation. Thank you. I take it you're going to do a sum up of, and maybe as you do that, you should also, you know, give an answer to pertinent questions. How does all of this assist us achieving a better life for our people? And how does it also advance our national democratic revolution?
Thank you, Chair. I think perhaps before I do the conclusion, can I quickly just ask maybe Nolo Tanto to talk about what work we are doing with SADC? Nolo Tanto.
Thanks, Dr. Mukhadra. In terms of SADC, internationally, there has been a move towards the regional protection of plant breeders' rights, meaning that you will file an application in one country, but you get IP protection in all members of that particular region. This has been the case in terms of CTVO in Europe, and also East Asian countries are moving towards that. And in Africa, OWAPI member countries have already indicated to UPOF that they would also like to form a regional protection system. Coming to our region, there's also been a move in terms of SADC countries. There has been an indication that they will also like to implement a regional protection system for all our SADC countries. The last workshop that we've had in this regard was in 2008, and this was in partnership between South Africa, the U.S. Patent Office, as well as UPOF, where presentations were made, and all the SADC countries that were present gave an indication that they were for the regional protection system. At this point in time, it is still in process, and DAF is in constant communication with the SADC Secretariat to move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nilsander. I think just to sum up, what Dr. Jaffa has given is why we're actually here and in the detail of where are the changes. But I also want to also ask Dr. Jaffa to just reflect that slide which talks on the UPOF bodies. and explain the challenges which we have, because I think there's that challenge where if we don't participate at that lower level of the technical working party for different groups in terms of the meetings, you find that developing countries are actually left out. What has been interesting is that I think China and particularly Brazil, and also as part of the developing countries, have been participating actively. Now, if we don't participate at that level, by the time a standard reaches the council, you don't have time to change that. So it's very important for those technical. I think Dr. Zafta gave an example that South Africa will be chairing two committees. So in chairing these two committees, I think we'll ensure that we got, particularly ensure that our interests are guarded. The chair also asked me to also talk on the how does this actually have an impact on development. You find that often farmers. You find that often farmers in rural areas, most remote areas, they use varieties which are old. And you find that some of the varieties actually in terms of the yield, just to give like for instance maize, so in terms of the yield, the yields are very, very low. So I think part of this process is to ensure that, you know, and you find that being low, you find that some of the yields actually are even unstable. They don't stay for a long period of time. So I think the intention that it's important that we gain access to some of these improved varieties, and I think that's the issue around the issue about most of the foreign people owning more rights than South Africans themselves, because sometimes we would like to have that particular variety, bring it into the country to ensure that it improves the yields in terms of production. So I think that part and the benefits for development purposes. Sometimes also I think in terms of the definition in the Act on the policy, I think the definitions I think are in page 2 there, where they're talking about the farmers' rights. I think that part, where that part was not actually included in the current Act, and in terms of the amendment of the Act itself, and the policy proposal is to have that section which talks on policy options. So it is very, very important that also when we look into the benefits of plant varieties protection system, we must ensure that as a country we look after that. And some of those benefits, the first one is on innovation and investment in plant breeding. The second one, more better varieties for farmers and growers, that they will improve their yield. Increased income for farmers, okay. The rural development and rural employment and economic development, how rural employment, because I want to give an example. I think perhaps maybe like the ARC in South Africa or some of the universities, they will then employ some people to work on some of the fuel stations where now they're actually testing some of the material. But also the other issue which has got the greatest impact in the issue of development in international markets. Now, I said on this slide, I said, if we don't participate in these international standard-setting bodies, it would happen that a standard is created. It mainly favors the developing countries and developed countries and not for the developing countries. But I think it's one other part which we need to strengthen where in terms of the technical participation in some of these standard setting bodies. I also spoke about, for instance, currently I think we have basically those numbers which I indicated to you on the foreign ownership, I think in the table which was copied to you. But in totally, we actually, in terms of our legislation, our intention is to this policy proposal should, you know, be considered, and so that we can be in a position to actually to amend the Act. So it will lead to the amendment of the Act. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks. Members, we do have two apologies. One from the Director General, who has to be on some other assignment. think there's a letter somewhere here that I saw. And also one of our members, Salam Abraham, is attending an oversight on another committee. And also member Paliso is also attending another oversight, same, which is correctional services. And welcome back, member Carter, and members who also came late, I think, Mama Twala, you're also most welcome. We're scanning a bit about, you know, marriages and divorces. Talks about ID and DA, and talks about COPE and divorce papers being served in court. Now that's on a lighter note. Members, that then becomes the fuller brief of the department on these very important matters that have to do with ensuring safe food and secured food for our nation, and also our role that we play in those standard setting bodies, so that we don't find ourselves in a situation where some of our food has literally been rejected in Thailand, precisely because of some of those confusion on terminologies, I'm told, and with regards to standards and quality of such, therefore. Maybe you might wish to talk about that later on as well, because we haven't heard any briefing on that. Maybe not for now, but if you have any update, you might wish to, you know, keep us posted on that one as well. The floor is open, Mama Mabuza, Baba Ndabazita.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, before my questions, one of my questions will come from this document. Chairperson, Dr. Mukhajani, when briefing us, made mention of more foreigners having sons breeders' rights. And her explanation was that they want variety. And Chairperson, I don't 100% agree with Dr. Mukhajani. In this very document, they talk about lack of expertise in all areas affecting the administration of the Act. They talk about lack of awareness about the Plant Breeders' Rights Act. They talk about some stakeholders not aware of formal processing DAF to deal with their comments or complaints with regard to the issuing of PBR certificates. So, Dr. Mukhajani, I will say South African farmers are deprived of all this information that you are giving us. How can a farmer participate in what he or she doesn't know, because you are not marketing enough this act, and you are not making people to be aware that DAF can provide information on this? Secondly, Chairperson, I would like to know, what are we doing to deal with tensions around food security and biodiversity management? The third one, Chairperson, is on page 4. To say, what are we doing to take into account the interest and contributions of traditional farmers? Because traditional farmers are not taken seriously. And what we are doing right now, we are busy eating goji berries from China. And to me, goji berries and cassava from Nigeria and Mozambique, those are traditional varieties that we are buying from all health shops and not promoting our own brand of traditional medicines or whatever. The third one, Chairperson, bear with me, Chairperson, I've got a few of them. Chairperson, the other one is, what is the department doing for farmers breeding effort to be recognized in intellectual property rights system? The fourth one, Chairperson, how do we correct or deal with the exploitation of traditional knowledge by others or the big business or the big guys? Because right in Limpopo, in Venda, there are traditional medicines for manhood. And people from outside come and pick up the stuff, go and improve it, and sell. To say, what are we doing about that? The other one, Chairperson, is the skewed ownership and research. To say 60% of plant breeders are from Europe and North America. Why is it like that? Don't we have expertise? There are four apple breeders in the whole world, if I'm not mistaken. And one was in ARC and he has just, I don't know whether it's on pension or he has resigned. What are we doing as the Department of Agriculture to correct the system? Chairperson, the other one, I just want to find out if South Africa is serious about the regulation of alien invasives. If the answer is yes, why do we have a lot of jacarandas in Pretoria? Meanwhile, we know very well that a jacaranda tree is an alien tree. Why are we not dealing with that if we are serious about alien invasion trees? Dr. Mkhatshane. The other one, Chairperson. Yes, under maintenance, page 16, maintenance of plant material after expiry of the right. Where you say DAF does not have facilities to maintain all the plant material varieties which have been granted plant breeders' rights. Why? Is that you don't have capacity as a department? Why are you raising things that are not happening in the department? I'll come up again, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry I might be jerking the discussion a bit back. Dr. Mkhatshane, when she first elaborated or briefed the committee, she stressed that all they are going to deal with sort of divorces from the genetically modified staffs. And I have a question here. Simply was, in her presentation, she said the intention of this breeders' rights is to have the product that is to increase production for our country, to as well as to produce the crop that will be resistant to insect attack and drought. Food security as well was mentioned. And my main concern, seemingly, is that since these form part of what I would say the genetically modified stuff, how could then we divorce it from the fact that the very same the very same policy that aims to secure food for the country as well as maybe exporting some has a bad effect. As a result, we've learned of the maize that was rejected in Kenya, which was from South Africa. And I'll go as far as saying, even in the case of these fruits that have been shown here, you could find that out of those breeded fruits, you could find that some are big in size but have less taste, too much water in. Some have, in the case of, I'll make the case of sugarcane, where you could find that small and shorter sugarcane stalk sticks have maxacrose. That means they taste sweeter when compared to these tall and heavy sticks, which have less sucrose and have a lot of water in. What effect would the department say with regards to this in our society's consumption? What effect do they have? I'm not sure whether I'm well understood on the question.
Okay, let's take those two. And then we'll come back on the second round. Thank you.
Chair, I think just to comment is that I think as a team we'll answer the questions. The first question I think we requested us to talk on Thailand. We'll do a proper briefing on that one later on, and then we'll come and tell you. But basically, it's around administrative procedures which were introduced by Thailand, where they stopped internationally and requested all the countries to make submissions to them for them on plant health matters. And then what occurred is that we also made submissions to Thailand, and we had certain challenges on certain information, and there was just exchange of information between us and Thailand. And what they did is that when they introduced those new measures, Thailand as a country, internationally, you know, most of the countries complained at the WTO, in the SPS committee, the sanitary and phytosanitary matter. So just that, but I think we'll do a proper briefing and come and brief you properly on those particular issues. Whoa, the questions coming from the Honorable Member Mabuza, we're going to share this one with my colleagues, and I'll only answer the ones which actually I'm able to answer. I've expressed my capacity that by profession I'm a veterinarian, and I'm actually supervising production, which is a challenge which I depend on the two scientists which are on my left. Now, on the issue of food security and biodiversity, I'm going to request Dr. Jafta to actually briefly talk on that. I think Dr. Fisser to answer on that. The first one on how can a farmer participate in this when they don't have information and lack of awareness. And what the Honorable Member mentioned regarding the issues of lack of awareness and which is there in the policy document under page 4 and later on under page 16. I think these issues actually, they fall under the, I think it's under the topic of a problem statement. That's the current problem. Now, in introducing this policy, we are trying to address those challenges. Like we've mentioned, that one of the one critical one is, for instance, I would indicate that the registrar, the support mechanism for the registrar, we've got very few team of people. And Dr. Jafta also mentioned the fact that we're also competing with the private sector. You find that with the staff turnover, we compete in private sector, and the salaries are not really competitive, particularly for specialists. Because for you to become a specialist, you take some time to know, you start. I remember when I came into the department in 1995 as a director for animal health, it took me time to be able to understand some of the international issues. So I'm saying that to build a scientist who is internationally recognized, it actually takes time for you, for one to be able to can interact on some international issues at international standard setting bodies. Now, the issues Mama Busa, Honorable Member, mentioned here actually are a challenge, and we are trying to address that in the policy so that in our interest, the registrar should have an advisory body, and that will be drawn from different expertise area where they'll be able to support her for decision-making process. I think it's one of the things which we mentioned. Just to give an example, the Office of the Registrar staff component, we've got only one registrar, two technical support, and one admin support. So there is that need because they are just registering, but they would need, I think, a team of scientists out either in universities or research institutions who time and again will be able to actually to come and support them. Now, can I request Dr. Fisher to come on the question on food security and biodiversity?
Thank you for the opportunity to answer this one. The Honourable Member asked about the tensions between food security and biodiversity. And 2010 has been announced by the UN as the year of biodiversity for that very same concern, that there's so much the attaining of food security at a national level for most industrial countries comes sometimes at a cost
to the environment, to biodiversity, and a whole lot of other issues. So announcing it as the year of biodiversity is to produce food in a sustainable manner, taking care of the environment, taking care of your natural resource management, but also taking care of your biological resource management and your natural resource management. So you need to produce in a sustainable manner, taking care of the air, the water, the land, natural resources, and your biological resources, taking care of your plants and your animals. So at all times we promote production in a sustainable manner that takes care, and it's in a conservation manner that takes care of the natural as well as the biological resources. The questions which were asked also by Honourable Member in terms of the issues around the what is in the market, the goji berries, and also the issues of some of the crops. I think one, maybe let me step back and say, we as South Africa, it's true that we haven't done much in terms of promoting our own crops. When we are preparing for this and everything, there are various ways for us to be able to promote our own crops. When we're coming this way, preparing for this, and also we're talking, and I said, you know, we don't have a fora where we would have, like in Germany, they would have the whole week and promote food from Germany. But what they've done, they've gone further because then they promote food internationally. So we're going to work on that, on promotion of food, on food, because you find that when you go internationally, for instance, like I know that in Paris, every year there's Africa Day, and they get Africans to come in and promote their food. You find that Botswana will very critical and very, very accurately promote their Tswana food, but then you find in South Africans, actually we have not defined what we call South African food plate. And you find that the focus will be more on the, like, for instance, bobokis and everything like that. And you find the embassy people will just focus on the stuff which is there, and they'll cook something which is there. We have to do more on that. I think in terms of promotion, in terms of the our own food, I think the issue, like, for instance, we're talking about madumbe. Because normally when we talk about food shortages, people talk about maize only. They don't even talk about madumbe, because madumbe is also another alternative starch, and also sorghum, which is also another alternative starch. People never talk about that. Now, the issue is that it's for us to do that initiative, and we're talking how creatively we can work on that. We're working on the idea to work on that, and we would like to link that to the World Food Day, perhaps maybe for next year, but not for this year. To give an example, I gave an example of Germany. You find that during that week, they'll have an international people coming to promote their own food. Now, this could be something which actually also promote and be linked to tourism. So that's why I'm saying that thing is still, honourable member, in the idea side, where we are trying to come and, you know, to creatively. But I think we saw that also we should work with the tourism department on that, because I think this morning they've indicated that they've got more funds to do promoting tourists after the World Cup. So we're going to start talking to them to come and promote this. Now, the other part, we can prevent the imports of other products, because we've got other international nationals in South Africa. And you find that some of the products, they want to have them in the market. And that's where now they'll come and request for import. Like the Nigerians who are South African, they will be concentrating to make sure that they have okra on the market. And then you go, the Ethiopians, they want to have injera on the market. So it's that challenge which we have, which I think we can't prevent that. But I think what is important is for us to make efforts to promote our own food in South Africa, and also recognizing the fact that some of our crops, one cannot treat maize different from potatoes. You heard about the challenges of the potato industry now, where they're indicating there are shortages of the potatoes because of the black forest. It occurred more in Limpopo and also last year and even this year. And we are talking to Potato South Africa, look into mechanisms which can actually ensure that all those alternative food crops, we are in a position to come up with strategies to prevent that. Now, I'm going to also talk about why we have the school ownership and research, why. You see, I think the issue of the research, when you look into the budget, and I think that has been corrected to some extent, that there is correction now, they got more money to do certain things now. But I think the other part which we need to work hard on is the one on the detention or determination of the agenda on research. Now, that part, I think, the minister normally would have a representative in the board for a research council, and that part should start there. But also in the department side, the department should be able to talk to the scientists and say, this is the area where we would like you to research on, not the other way around, where a scientist will come and present a paper and say, you know, we would like to research on that. Now, you find that then we would have, instead of them, yes, focusing on improving some of our indigenous crops, the focus there is not there at all. So that's why I'm saying that the time has come, because we've been talking to them and said, we have to determine the research agenda and tell the ARC particularly, because it's our main research institution, that they need to actually focus on this particular. We give you so much money to do this particular research. So that part, I think it was also mentioned, I think the article which I think the chair was talking on the conditional grants. I agree, because I think what has been happening, we give money to the institution. After the scientists have come and put up a proposal instead of the way around. We've got the, what you call the Agricultural Research Forum, where we work with the private sector and research institution and talk on that. But I think that element actually needs to be strengthened to ensure that we are in a position to say, when we give funds to the ARC, we say, you do 20% of your research should be in this particular area. So I think in South Africa as a whole, even in the universities, I think the interest in them in focusing on the indigenous crop is very, very minimal. So we need to actually redirect the research agenda. I think I'll let Dr. Jafta talk on an example the Honorable Member mentioned regarding the how do we correct the system. I think I gave an example on the research, but I think she gave an example on the apple breeders, only that we have four apple breeders. I'll ask him to talk about that. And I think he gave an example also earlier when he was doing the presentation about the pink lady. You know, when you go to the supermarket, you find the different colors of the apples. We've got these red ones, we've got these pink ones, and the green ones, and the in-between. But the pink ones, that one, I think they're owned by the Australians. They came up with that. And there was a lot of debate, I think, some 2 years ago when this issue came up, it was introduced. And that's what I'm saying now. If we don't participate in the standard setting bodies internationally, we get left out. Can I request Dr. Jafta to go on? And also answer the question of Honourable Member Tebogun.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Mukhajani. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I'd quickly like to start on the issue around the foreign ownership. I think we have to separate the number of breeders and foreign ownership, because a breeder is not necessarily the right holder, and foreign ownership does not necessarily limit access, because when a variety is released, it is to the benefit of the right holder to ensure that people have access to it, so that, because that's the only way that he's going to gain royalties to it. But I have to agree, and Nolotando has information here on the extent of the poem industry and ARC's capacity around that. We've recently experienced that when we were dealing with an appeal under the PBR Act, that it is difficult to actually find apple breeders. So you are indeed quite right. But you would see that in an attempt to address the skewed ownership, what we were saying is that we have to support the national agricultural research system, so that that capacity is being developed, so that we do have more breeders. So that is already an intervention that we put in place in terms of the policy. In terms of the lack of farmers' participation and the lack of awareness, what we were trying to say is that people, there's infringement because people are not necessarily aware of the of the right, of the extent of the right that was granted to a right holder. It's important that there is a challenge, because how would my mother that plants this variety know that it is a protected variety? But the Act then has some protection, or the policy provides for some protection to say there's no infringement when he or she uses it on his or her own holding. It's only, it becomes only an issue when there are sales. But when there are actual, when persons buy, like a farmer would buy protected varieties, there are labeling prescripts, which is covered under another piece of legislation, that would tell them that this is a plant a protected variety. So a big farmer cannot claim they didn't know that was a protected variety, and then engage in sales of a variety without paying the necessary royalties. But this is what we are saying: we will increase our capacity to create the awareness, so that infringement, we don't have people who actually infringes a right, because it is important for us to provide a system so that breeders have confidence that their rights will be protected. Otherwise, there will no longer be an incentive to keep on creating these new varieties, which we are saying is important for sustainable agricultural development. So some of the concerns that the honourable member raised, I think, is indeed addressed in the policy. In terms of what we are doing to promote traditional varieties, I want to add to what Dr. Mohajani has said. In the policy, we mentioned our program on conservation of genetic resources for food and agriculture, and this is our way of protect or conserving those traditional varieties, where we identify specific regions where we actively collect indigenous material, and those are then stored in our national plant genetic resources center. In common language, I refer to it as our gene bank, which we have in Pretoria. And part of that collection also has another activity where we collect the indigenous knowledge associated with a particular land race species and document the indigenous knowledge. And when through our surveys there's an indication that in a particular area they don't have that variety of land race material anymore, we are able to what we call repatriate or bring back to that community a specific land race material. So that is our attempt to ensure that land race material is indeed conserved. In terms of the exploitation of indigenous knowledge, this documentation also prevents that kind of exploitation, because once it is documented, there is evidence that a particular community had that knowledge, and they can actually use that information in whatever court proceedings. I've indicated that the Patents Amendment Act does put a requirement for disclosure, to say if you're using indigenous material or indigenous knowledge, you would have to disclose, make sure that you have gone through the prior informed consent procedures as prescribed under the Biodiversity Act, as well as the necessary access and benefit sharing regimes are in place with that community or individual from whom you had access to material. Then the Department of Science and Technology also has an IKS policy, through which the objective of the policy is actually to strengthen African cultural values, to also use indigenous knowledge for economic growth. And under that program, there's documentation, there are systems to to identify indigenous knowledge, to develop it further. There's work that's currently being done by the Medical Research Council where they use indigenous knowledge to actually develop products. But it's obviously still, we're still a long way off in terms of getting, attaining the standards that countries such as India have already attained in terms of using indigenous knowledge towards economic growth. Then I would like to, in terms of the main, Honourable Member also had a concern about our inability to maintain material after the right has expired. I want to use the example. There is a right holder has a plot of field where he maintains his apple varieties. After that right has expired, there's no longer any incentive for him to maintain those trees because he perhaps wants to use the land for something else. So it is important for us as that we still have access to that reference material. So what we are saying, what we will be coming up with, and this is already part of the mandate of ARC, is that that kind of material should be maintained in field gene banks. Okay? So those we will then request ARC to strengthen that area because we've already engaged them, but there is some concerns as to how do they maintain those field gene banks such that it is of use to the evaluators. Secondly, we will also be proposing agreements with a farmer to maintain the material as far as possible. Because remember, after the right has expired, we don't have any legal clout or there's no legal obligation on him to maintain the material. But we've also we're proposing that we will enter into an agreement for him where possible to maintain the material. Where it's not, the material then has to be maintained in the field gene banks of ARC. In terms of the GMOs and PBR, what Dr. Mukhajani was saying in terms of the separation of GMOs from PBR, GMOs and the safety, human and health safety, and environmental safety, that is covered, all of that is covered under the GMO Act. So we were saying that all of those issues are covered there. However, once a particular GMO event, which can be insect resistance, is approved, it then means that event can be used in variety, normal plant varieties, then you then end up with a GM variety. So there is that link, but in terms of the safety, it's covered there. The PBR then covers whether this GM variety still complies with the distinctive uniformity and stability. And one of the challenges that we've identified is that some of these GMO events are morphologically, what we see on the outside is no different, and our assessment is actually only in terms of the morphology. But it is still regulated. Okay, it's still regulated. The GMO Act would know which varieties have been produced, which events that were approved under the GMO Act are now included in the respective crops. Nolotanu Che has one additional has further information on the palm fruit area that ARC. Are you covered, Nolotanu? Oh, she's covered. Thanks, Che.
Members, we have a few more questions. To Toy, that's the only hand. That's one.
Thank you, Chairman.
Mama Wood. You know, the matters that we're dealing with are quite scientific, understandably so. But you always have, it's because I'm speaking, it's always, and I've got to respect that, you always have and you must always have a way of demystifying. Because what's the point of having information and knowledge if it is not going to be applied? And those that apply that knowledge have to know and understand I think equally whilst you might go and, you know, be schooled on a number of, you know, these things, equally important here is to find a way of schooling ourselves and demystifying, especially having to come to us and other, you know, audiences. Because equally here, when this side of the table might come up with its own, you know, terminologies and our own science in terms of our revolution, obviously these are matters that will still be, will need to be demystified. Now we really are treading on that one, so that we are able to see ourselves going forward together. That's the whole intention. And perhaps as we go forward, we really need to strike that balance. Otherwise, we might as well just come here and tell ourselves we've been there and we're gone. As to what happened, getting to find a sense from some of us as to what really have been our understanding. And clearly, you know, we were just speaking on above the heads of it happens all the time, especially when you're going to come and talk, you know, acronyms at times, you know, TRIPS and DOS and this and that and MORS and this. It really does not serve the purpose at the end of the day. I mean, I'm just being, you know, polite and also frank on the other hand. Sorry, Mr. Dutoy. Mama, Abuza Taraf.
Just check if it works. And thank you, Chairman. I just have to say my wipers was on, so I'm not mystified. I'm totally demystified. I could follow you. Thank you. It was very informative. I just want to have a question or two. when you have to make a decision whether this new plant species is actual fact been developed before, I take it that genetic tests will be done. Is that correct? I just want to make sure about that. And then the other one is getting to traditional practices of farmers. The crafting of vines and other plant material, I think that's not really creating a new plant, is it? Because it's putting two together. So the trial and error that people do on crafting, for instance, vines, is not covered by this. That's okay. I want to know that these trial and errors that farmers do, sometimes, you know, they are not aware of any long-term research that's being done on some remote place, and they might just through trial and error, you know, get to something and not even know that they are on the same track. It's happened before in the past. So on that, I would just like to know, did any farmers or farmers organizations or anybody involved in this, breeders, have they had any input or comments on the draft policy? Thank you.
Mama was.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 17, Dr. Mkhajana, on 3.18, compulsory assessments. It's a very long sentence that two sentences that I don't understand. Let me read it for you. The register may, if satisfied that the holder is reasonably refusing a license or imposing unreasonable conditions for the issue thereof, and that as a result of such refusal or such conditions, the reasonable requirements of the public with regard to the variety in question are not being satisfied or will not be satisfied, he or she may issue a compulsory license. It is not clear what will constitute unreasonable refusal, unreasonable conditions, as well as reasonable requirements of the public. The last one, it's on your implementation strategy. It's on your implementation strategies, where you indicate that your source comments from interested and affected parties. This will include two provincial workshops. Dr. Mkhachan, my problem is, are these two provincial workshops going to cover even an ordinary person from Muyeshe? Those who have got indigenous knowledge, are they going to be covered in these two provincial workshops? And how did you reach the number of two provinces? Was consultation done to say all the provinces will be covered in these two provinces, in these two workshops? That's my main problem, that ordinary poor people won't be able to attend. And that indigenous knowledge of medicine, of planting cassava, of planting mitumbula, of planting whatever, won't be exposed to you as a department. Thank you very much.
I think the issues are straightforward, members. Official, sorry. I am very keen on this promotion of South African food, but this is not a topic for now. I'm sure even ourselves as public representatives, it is something that we should really, you know, pride ourselves of. Okay, thanks.
The questions, I'll leave them to the two experts here. But I think on the issue which you raised in demystifying some of the information and the knowledge in terms of this, I think I would like to suggest something, that we've got a site here at Stellenbosch, in Stellenbosch, which we can arrange a visit where you visit the site. And I think so that we take you through this plant breeding. In addition to that, I would like to suggest that perhaps maybe also we think about you visiting the committee, visiting the gene bank in Pretoria. And then after those two visits, well, then it will give you time maybe to start thinking about this now, because I know that even for myself, when I was reading the act and reading the policy, because it was drafted before I came and moved into production, you know, I struggled. I kept on asking and kept on asking questions. So I think it might be necessary that perhaps maybe we give you time and then and give ourselves time on this particular policy, that because what we intend doing, we want to, so that you become satisfied before when we go out for consultations, we can arrange those two visits, so that we take it through, and then maybe when you then come to Pretoria, visiting the gene bank, we then will finalize this particular post. I think that's the suggestion which I'm putting forward. I think honourable members can consider that, but I think I can also request Dr. Chester to respond on the questions. Dr. Chester.
Thank you, Chair. I will first ask Nolo Tando to respond to this, some of the more technical matters around the grafting and that the trial and error, which actually refers to the development process and how that is covered during the assessment.
Thank you. In terms of grafting of vines, you are correct. That is not covered in the Act because it does not necessarily mean the development of the new variety. But it might be protected in terms of the Patent Act if you want to protect the method thereof. And coming to trial and errors, I would like to mention that the Act itself does provide for breeder's exemption, where farmers or anyone who wants to do any experimental work is allowed to use protected varieties without paying royalties to the breeder of that particular variety. And in the cases where out of this trial and error that a new variety is developed, then that farmer now becomes a breeder, and that farmer can apply for protection in terms of the plant breeder's rights. Thanks, Honourable Minister.
Thank you. It also, I think the question also related to what are the sources of information that we use in terms of comparing then whether this isn't something that was there already. We obviously have our own list of standards against which we compare a candidate variety, and that is important. But also you would realize, this is why we're saying that maintenance of material after the expiry of a right is important, so that somebody don't come up with an old thing and claim it to be new. But referring to as much sources as possible is also an element that we propose in terms of the policy. Now, Lutando, can you explain to Honourable Member the issue about the compulsory licensing, and then I will conclude on the consultation.
Thank you. I think I should first mention that this policy, we identified the challenges that we are facing currently so that we can be able to address those during the amendment of the Act. So the issue of compulsory licenses was identified as a challenge because in the current Act, it just mentioned those that the registrar will issue this compulsory license. Now, a compulsory license is when you are a breeder, you are supposed, after a period of time, 5 years or 8 years, depending on a variety, you are required to license your variety to other people so that other people can also benefit from this particular variety. Now, in instances where this breeder refuses to issue licenses, then this third person can come to the registrar and ask for the registrar to intervene and issue a compulsory license. Now, the challenge is the current Act just says the registrar must see if the breeder is being unreasonable. It keeps on talking about unreasonable conditions, but that there are no clear guidelines that will guide the registrar in making a decision on what would constitute these unreasonable grounds. So we are hoping that in highlighting that in this policy, we'll be able, when we do our regulations or even amending the Act itself, we'll be able to address such issues so that we don't have grey areas where we find that the registrar issues a compulsory license for this person and does not issue for the next person because there are no clear guidelines. Thank you.
In terms of the decision around the consultation, I'd like to point out that Indigenous knowledge, exploitation of biological diversity, those are areas that we identify which plant breeders' right or plant variety protection may have an impact on. And therefore, we highlight them and we recognize them as areas that we need to be mindful of. For where Indigenous knowledge is concerned, we've already indicated that there is this IKS policy that the Department of Science and Technology has already implemented widely, and I have to assume that whilst in terms of dealing with that policy, there has been this wide consultation. I remember some of it, and it's almost close to 5 years that the policy was developed, and I know that there was that huge or wide consultation on IK. The policy aims to give us guidance clear only as it relates to how do we manage plant variety protection within the South African context, mindful of all the other obligations that we have, both domestic as well as internationally. So there would be, Honourable Member, other areas that's going to be covered through that's already covered, such as IK, but we will work collaboratively with those departments to further ensure that whatever they've put in place is further strengthened, like we've already identified DST and DTI through their Patent Amendment Act. The choice of two provinces, I remember Nolotando telling me, yes, which?
Okay. I think on that one, I think the question is,
I think that on that one, in terms of the two provinces, I think ideally we were limited by the resources. Perhaps maybe we might need to consider the concern, and I think the concern is noted. We'll have to look into how we can redirect the funds to ensure that we create awareness and also ensure there's broader participation by farmers. So I think we take note of that, and we would consider reviewing that.
Thank you, Chair. There was one last question in terms of inputs by farmers. We've not done any consultation on this policy. There was a decision from the department that your committee would be the first stop before we start engaging the wider stakeholder base. So it's only after that we had your inputs and your agreement that we can go ahead with the consultation, that it will be published for a 30-day comment period, and then we will consider all of those inputs. But ultimately, which is very important, is that this policy will inform the amendment of the Plant Breeders' Rights Act.
I think in my suggestion, Chair, earlier on this, I think in terms of while we're doing this consultation, also you also visit also these two institutions, I think it will help so that by the time we come to final approval, and then, you know, you also got the comments from the public after publishing. Because what we intend to do, what we want to do is that it can be like we want to publish this for comments. So we are still going to collate those comments, and I think you might be also interested in seeing those comments. But besides that, we will also be doing the workshops and increasing the check. I couldn't hear. Chair was saying, what did you want to? I think as soon as possible. I think it will work with your office to determine the dates. The one which can be done quickly is the Stellenbosch one, because of the logistics. We can organize personal transport to take you, and then we go there. And then maybe then we'll work on the Pretoria one. And that's where now we can start engaging. I'll suggest it.
Okay. You've got a new point, Mr. Dutroy? Okay.
Thank you. I think it's a wise move to do the consultation thing as you described it, and also pulling in the other organizations on an organizational level, like the universities and those people too. I just hope that when we do publish it for comments, it doesn't happen in December when everybody is gone. 30 days is very short. There was one other thing I'm a bit worried about, and that is on exactly this point on page 17 that Madam raised. And that is what we should for the future, try and avoid. Yes. We should try to avoid people engaging in lawsuits. So when we have this policy ready, I think we must already have consulted maybe a legal opinion on certain issues around us, on reasonable conditions or something like that, because I think that if somebody wants to refuse to grant a license, he should have that right. I think we should go into. I'm not a lawyer, so one should perhaps get a legal opinion on constitutional rights around this thing beforehand, because once we've drafted the policy, and now it goes to redrafting or amending the laws. And it turns out to be somewhere something unconstitutionally has slipped in. Then we have a problem again afterwards. So to save ourselves all the embarrassment, I think maybe you should clear that from the beginning. Otherwise, 5 years down the line, we have a 5 million rand lawsuit from one guy suing the other one, and they both get wiped out, you see. We don't want that.
Okay. Okay, I guess that's the comment Mr. Tutu is procrastinating. Wise man.
The demystification of the future.
Wise man indeed. I think the issues are straightforward, as it were, for now. That then begins to be the first briefing on the matters on the table. We'll then have to come back to you as to when exactly, especially on the Stellenbosch, as you had proposed. I think we'll take the advice, members, without really having to engage on it. But the details, we'll work those outside, you know, of a meeting situation. I think we certainly do not have any other questions or comments or queries, which then should bring us to the end of our session. I think quite an informed session indeed, because it really does take us forward to the next step. That are going to be involved towards final amendment of the law, as you are proposing. Okay, members, thanks for the time, and thanks DDG and the team. We certainly are meeting again next week. The minister is going to brief us on fisheries and also on the